It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Welcome to the latest edition of the Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson, joined by Matt Fortuna. No guests today as we wrap up. Kind of interesting national signing day at Notre Dame. Less for what happened with Logan Diggs, three-star running back from Louisiana, sticking with a signed letter of intent that he actually signed in December, but had been having some second thoughts with LSU really over the last month. And more for sort of, I don't know, how Notre Dame presented. It was our first opportunity to talk to Marcus Freeman, new defense coordinator. We got Tommy Rees, Mike Elston, and Brian Polian as well. Brian Kelly just really introduced the four of them without taking questions. But there was, it was an interesting, I wouldn't call it a press conference, but it was sort of a mix of a college lecture and a press conference at once, because there was a lot of sort of information and sort of Notre Dame trying to explain how they recruit and the approaches that they take with various guys. And then a few Q&A with those four guys too. But I mean, Matt, you were on the call. I didn't actually ask any questions. Most of the ones I was going to ask were asked anyway, but what did you sort of take out of the day today, or the day on Wednesday?
It was weird. I mean,
yeah. I have not been part of one like that before.
Day after Groundhog Day. And guess what, fans, listeners, we're going to lead off talking about Brian Kelly's lax recruiting efforts. Surprise, surprise. I mean, it was so weird. Brian Kelly introduces people and then just disappears and doesn't take questions and may or may not have hired a safeties coach in the hour since. There are reports out there that Chris O'Leary, the grad assistant, or analyst, I should say, is getting promoted to be a full-time coach. But it was weird. Like you said, it felt like a college lecture. It felt like Brian Polian and Mike Elson were reading off a PowerPoint. I'm like, here's what a recruiting ranking is. Here's this, here's that. And it felt, frankly, very reactive to, you know, stories that have been out there, you know, including, you know, quotes from Tyson Ford's mother in your story last week about, you know, the I hate to call it an old trope because we've yet to see it like disproven yet, but like about, you know, whether this program led by Brian Kelly has the wherewithal of his stomach to actually aspire to be more on the recruiting trail. And I got to tell you, they didn't do themselves any favors with their presentation today, outside of maybe Marcus Freeman, who was as good as advertised, at least, you know, publicly speaking wise. It was weird. I mean, it felt almost like an audiobook version of Brian Polian's, you know, newly released book on coaching in some ways, because there were a lot of platitudes and whatnot that both he and Mike Elston were reading. And sure enough, Brian Kelly doesn't take questions. And the first question to Brian Polian is on Brian Kelly's comments from over a year ago now in Orlando about why can't you be a top five recruiting outfit? And sure enough, Mike Elston goes after, and he has his own TED talk introducing, you know, his philosophy of recruiting. And his question that he gets is about Brian Kelly's involvement with recruiting. So I don't know if Brian Kelly was leaving his assistants out to dry here. I don't know if he told them to read or say everything they said today, but it just certainly wasn't like any signing day press conference anywhere. And it just felt weird. It was kind of like, oh, by the way, we're Notre Dame. We care about academics and we're going to do like, it just, none of it really added up for me today. And I can't say like Notre Dame came off better for it. If that's what they're going for here.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, there was a lot of interesting, I guess, data or takes or positions that they could out where, you know, you have Brian Polian talking about how there's no like superstar recruiters because everything is collaborative. They have Mike Elston talking about how Marcus Freeman is a tiger in recruiting. And I think, you know, anyone who's sort of followed recruiting even loosely has seen the impact that Freeman has made already. And it's been significant. You know, you're talking about how Notre Dame, are they going to push into the top five? They didn't really make any headway there. But then it's like you take a step back from that and you just go through the 24/7 sort of player averages for Brian Kelly's really 11 recruiting classes, just, you know, set aside the transition class from 2010. This one ranked eighth of the 11 in terms of average player ranking. But the class that ranked ninth was the 2017 class, which overachieved by in every way possible with two playoff berths and 43 wins. So it's, I don't know, recruiting is, it's a really complicated thing to pull apart because, you know, I think you saw Notre Dame do a little bit of that today. It's like they have a lot to be proud of, winning 43 games and going to the playoff twice. Yet at the same time, you know, you have Brian Pulley talking about how they can push onward and be self-critical with recruiting. It's a difficult, I think, subject for them to tackle today. Maybe it would have been better left to the head coach, but it was interesting to hear from those four guys talk about different aspects of the process.
It just felt so random and so kind of, you know, piecemeal together. The superstar comment that Brian Pulley made was met, frankly, with eye rolls by people elsewhere. It's not something that you hear coaches say, or frankly, I think they should say, given, you know, the reputations of some of the people in recruiting circles in that building. I mean, you know, to hear Brian Pulley and say, would we rather be top five on the field or top five in recruiting? Like, no one said that to the either or.
Both.
You know, Alabama, like, Clemson, Ohio State seem to you know, not be picking and choosing.
Yeah, to me, that's one of the false choices, I think, of that, I think, gets some Notre Dame fans a little wound up, where it's almost presented as a choice when it doesn't need to be. It can be both.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it almost felt like, and I hate to make this an age thing, but, you know, they lead off with Brian Pulley and Mike Elson, who are two of the older guys, the guys who have been there forever and been in the business forever, I should say. And, you know, they close out with the coordinators, the two young guys, Tommy Reese and Marcus Freeman. And, Reese shined for other reasons, but, you know, he brought up a number of different three-star recruits that they developed too. And I just felt like, we know that, like, no one's ever doubted, like, at least on this podcast, no one's ever doubted the coaching chops of these coaches. I mean, every time we talk about them, we talk about how they've gotten more out of less, because if college football playoff rankings were based on the college football recruiting rankings, Notre Dame would not be a top four team two out of the last 3 years. And they have been, and that's a credit to that staff. But again, I never looked at it as an either or proposition. And, you know, today just felt like almost one big campaign against, like, you know, here's why we're not that, and here's why we can't be that. And, you know, it would have helped to have the head coach, you know, at least take some questions on that rather than having, you know, other people having to defend him or answer to him. I don't remember. I think it was Mike Elson or Brian. It might have been Brian Pulley, but I think it was Mike Elson who said, you know, well, anytime we've asked Brian Kelly to get on the phone with someone or to do this or do that, he's done it. So that's not a fair characterization. And, like, it just feels like, you think Clemson's coaches or Alabama's coaches say, like, guess what? Nick Saban's going to do us a solid today. Dabo Swinney's going to, you know, pick up the phone and FaceTime. Like, it's their jobs. Like, just the whole language with which they speak about recruiting there, it just feels so far off from what, you know, the elite of elite college football programs, how they speak about it, how they go about their business. Like, I just don't, it just felt very reactive, even though when Brian Pulling got asked about name, image, likeness, he's like, well, it's the federal government's jurisdiction, so we don't know what it's going to be like. And look, that's technically true, but Notre Dame has some smart people. Like, you could start getting creative and look at ways this could possibly benefit your program over others. I know other programs are doing it. The idea that, oh, we may have to, you know, programs may have to hire people just to monitor the portal. Guess what? Most already have people whose full-time jobs are to monitor the portal. That's my job half the time. You know what? I'm refreshing emails in the portal. I have to see who's in there. I mean, it just felt very, I don't know. I don't know if regressive is the right word, reactive. It was very far from inspiring. And on signing day, you're looking for inspiring. You're looking for hope.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I see what you're saying. I think that parts of it didn't feel like it was very much looking forward. And I guess, you know, some of that was by design, right? Like, if you're going to do sort of a recruiting analysis of the last 5 years, that by definition is looking backward. But with Mark Freeman, it felt like it was a very much forward-facing presser. That was, if you were a Notre Dame fan and you were watching today and you just tuned in for Marcus Freeman, like, you got a glimpse of why I think he will be a great recruiter for Notre Dame and a great coach. And talking to people close to players, that across the board, the players have been really impressed. I think they've been struck by how different he is from Clark Lee in terms of personality and energy. But one thing I loved that Freeman said today, and it's one of the things I think both of us appreciate about Clark Lee, is like there was a real self-awareness of like, I would be an idiot to come in here and say I'm going to change everything based on the success that Notre Dame has had defensively over the last 3 years. Yet at the same time, I think one of those changes will be the energy he brings. And I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he related to a wider section of players on the roster on a really fundamental personal level than Clark Lee did. And it's not to say Clark Lee wasn't good at that, because I think that he was, but I think Freeman has a chance to be very, very unique.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Clark Lee was unconventional, and I mean that in a complimentary way. But again, when you're unconventional, you're not for everyone. And so it's easy to see how it may not have been everyone's cup of tea. Marcus Freeman, guy started in back-to-back national title games. These kids grew up watching him play at the highest level. And if not for, I believe it was a freak heart condition, he's probably in the NFL. So, you know, he made lemonade out of lemons, right? Did I make that? Yeah. When life gives you lemons, whatever it is, and turned himself into a really good coach. I mean, he was the most sought after defense coordinator in the country for a reason. And Notre Dame landing him, and Marcus Freeman talked a little bit about that. He said, you know, don't tell me Brian Kelly's not a good recruiter, because like he recruited my wife. Like he sold my wife on this place, and everything we both had heard behind the scenes. I mean, that was a not insignificant piece to the choosing of Notre Dame over LSU, who was probably offering more money than Notre Dame was. So I think, you know, like you said, if you're to talk about the future, to talk about hope, to talk about optimism, as everyone does on signing day, that's the reason to do it. Is he a quote unquote superstar recruiter? I would venture to guess yes, even though we're not supposed to say anyone on Notre Dame is a superstar recruiter. But, you know, he said this quote multiple times. I'll say here, you can get any player you want in the country on the phone at Notre Dame. And it was refreshing to hear someone say that and, you know, see it for what it can be rather than, you know, what it is or what it has been. And you know, there was a little bit of pushback on Twitter when I put that out there about, well, but how many can get in and how many can do this? You know, I think you can't start off your process by dismissing so many people and writing off so many people and saying, we can't do this, we can't do that. I mean, he's right. I mean, the Notre Dame brand is still the most powerful, maybe one of the most powerful in college football. I don't know how many schools you could say that about, where literally, if you're at a private or Catholic school in this country, like you are attracted to Notre Dame in some way, shape or form. And there's a natural gravitational pull to that place that I don't think you could put a price on when it comes to the brand, to walking into a high school with a polo shirt on, to you name it. And I feel like we've heard that used as an excuse more often than we've heard it used as an advantage. And it'll be interesting to see how a guy who played at a high level, played at Ohio State, the highest level, and is coming from a really high, but not quite the highest level job as a coordinator at Cincinnati, could piece it all together. And we could talk a little bit about his own recruitment, but it was interesting to hear him talk about that as well when he ends up choosing Ohio State.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I think the one thing that I would love to ask him about down the road, maybe after he's had more time to settle in at Notre Dame, is like, sort of the process of understanding who fits here and who doesn't, you know, whether that's relying on Elston or relying on Polian or relying on BK, because I think all of those guys to a certain extent had their own education on the job about chasing players that might not fit here and the risks and rewards that go with that. You know, certainly you've had, you know, whether players not make it academically or not make it socially. And I think Notre Dame has done a much better job of staying away from those guys in the last few years. I mean, I think that I can't remember which coach talked about the courage to get in fights for guys that you really believe in and the courage to walk away from guys that you know are not going to make it. You know, I think the David Aviara situation, he signed with Texas today. He was a three-star defensive end when Notre Dame started recruiting him, ran into some legal trouble, was kind of waffling in his recruitment. Notre Dame decided to walk away from that. But he was a guy that the staff thought incredibly highly of, like top 100 good type of player. So how does, I'm curious how Freeman sort of adjusts to, all right, I get a guy from a school that Notre Dame has never recruited from and a state that it rarely recruits from. And this guy is really a fish out of water. You know, is this the kind of guy that we should keep chasing because it's so hard to make it here? Like that kind of recruiting education for Marcus Freeman, I think will be sort of interesting to sort of see it unfold over time. Because certainly, like I said earlier, I mean, Brian Kelly and Mike Elston, I think sort of had their own education in that way, you know, in 2011, 2012, 2013, before they really focused in on like maybe emphasizing fit a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, and the program's a different place now too, right? I mean,
yeah.
Mike Elston got there with Brian Kelly. They were taking over for Weiss. When Brian Polian got there the second time, they were taking over for a 4-8 team. You know, they were still finding their voice, finding themselves, whereas Marcus Freeman's walking into a defense where the guy he's replacing just got an SEC head coaching job before the age of 40, and the bulk of this roster is coming off a college football playoff appearance. So I think you're offered more flexibility in that regard because you're – I mean, at risk of oversimplifying it, your task right now is just improving this roster, both on the field and off the field. It's not breaking down barriers and restructuring the entire defense and, you know, how are we going to save our jobs because we're on the hot seat? Like, none of that, you know, is relevant right now. You could just go coach football and recruit football players. So I'll be curious to see that. And whenever, you know, the world returns to normal, and I hate to keep using that phrase over the last year, but I'll just fall back to it. But whenever recruiting regulations are back to, you know, normal NCAA structure and you can get on the road and do this, that, and the other, you know, what's going to be his hot spot and how are these guys going to coordinate? Because again, we've talked ad nauseum on this podcast about the lack of infrastructure in that recruiting department and how so many of these guys tend to act as independent contractors and are obsessed with credit. I mean, now you've got a guy who has a rep of being one of, if not the best recruiters in the country, who's a coordinator making a lot of money right now, who's probably, I think, immediately ascends the second most important person in that building behind Brian Kelly. How do they work with him, the new guy, and how does he work with them and adjust to their personalities? Because he has spent the entirety of his football life and career working and playing for the same people. I mean, he played for Luke Fickell. He worked for Luke Fickell. He worked with Daryl Hazel, went with Daryl Hazel to Purdue. So this is different too for everybody. And it'll be interesting to see how everyone grows together.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's, you know, continuity, and I don't know how much we're going to get into, you know, Chris Leary's and safeties coach John Bryce over at our Sports Daily reported that, I think, just before we started recording. You know, that continuity aspect, you know, it's a young staff. We mentioned sort of, you know, we even talked to Mike Mickens, but I think he's pretty popular with the players. You know, a young up-and-coming coach, Marcus Freeman, obviously is. O'Leary maybe. Reese is. It's in, you know, I think – I'm not sure how old Lance Taylor is, but he has got young guy energy. You know, it's a younger, I think, more modern staff all of a sudden. And look, it's, I think, like you said, Clark Lee was an out of the box thinker. I think Notre Dame really benefited from that. Mike Elko was a great hire. Like Chip Long obviously produced in his 3 years here. But I do think it's good to stay young on your staff. I think you sort of see that nationally now. The guys, a lot of guys getting jobs who are younger that are getting promoted internally, who sort of know the culture that you have set in place and can sort of act on that and execute it. I think that, O'Leary, if that's the hire, will probably be one of those.
I mean, look at, and this isn't a comparison I know Notre Dame fans want to hear, but I mean it in a good way for once. Look at Michigan and the changes they've made and the benefits they've reaped so far from a recruiting standpoint since Jim Harbaugh got his extension and pretty much wiped out half his staff. I mean, that might be the youngest coaching staff of the country right now. I don't know if there's a guy on that staff other than Jim Harbaugh who's reached the age of 40 yet. And, you know, they flipped a kid from Michigan State today, which, again, on its own, not the biggest deal. They should be doing that regularly, but it's pretty significant when you consider how far behind they had to come from to get that commitment. So I you know, generally speaking, yes. I mean, I don't want to sound discriminatory when I say this, but like younger is better, especially when we're talking about dealing with 18 to 22 year old kids. Yep. And especially in the case of coordinators, we mentioned Marcus Freeman's playing career. I know Tommy Rees wasn't an NFL player, but like everyone saw him play a lot of football at a very high level for Notre Dame not that long ago in their lifetimes. So that resonates as well, because, and he's now doing it for, he's doing it for the guy he played for.
Recruiting. Were you in the EA Sports NCAA football game or not? Like that's the threshold young hires now. Were you able to win a national championship with yourself?
I'm surprised that didn't come up today.
Yeah, that actually would be one thing I would love to ask Reese about, like how many national championships you won as Notre Dame starting quarterback digitally. I think that's part of it. One I think is just relatability. I think another thing is energy. You know, probably part of it is time, frankly. I have two kids, you have one. I realize Marcus Freeman has six, but if you're that stage of your life, I think it's that part of the job becomes much more challenging. And I do think there's also probably something to be said. I think the audible with Brew and Stoops dealt with this as a mailbag question about like the dynamics of a staff. You're looking for like scheme guys, culture guys, sort of the old hand, the local, the former star at your school, or the young up and comers. I think, you know, Notre Dame has done well with the young up and comers, I think. And sometimes you got to replace them faster than you want, whether it be Clark Lee or Mike Elko. But you benefit from that youthful energy on your staff and your meeting rooms and your practices.
Yeah, you've got Mike Sanford as well, young guy who became a head coach after being at Notre Dame. I agree. I mean, if you're talking about a blend of young and old, I mean, again, I feel weird putting in this context and comparing ages and this guy to that guy. But yeah, you do have Jeff Quinn, former older guy, former head coach at the MAC. You have Mike Elston, Brian Kelly's right-hand man of 17 years now, I think. Mm-hmm. Brian Poleen, former head coach at Nevada. Football legacy, second stint at Notre Dame, knows the place extremely well. And then you have John McNulty, who we've also never talked and spoken to. Just think of that when you said Mike Mickens. I don't know much about him, but he's an older guy. But the guys we do know, the guys we saw today, Marcus Freeman, Tommy Rees, Lance Taylor, if he's north of 40, that would shock me. I don't think he is. He played not too long ago at Alabama. So I do think there's a good blend there. And that's what you need, especially when you're going to get back on the road, is guys who are going to get after it, who are going to, like you said, I mean, frankly, I don't want to say don't have anything else going on in their lives, because it's not like people who don't have kids are like free to do whatever they want. I mean, it's not everyone's now. Different. Yeah, right. Exactly. Not now. Now they're all going stir crazy. But it's different. And we could talk about today, we could talk about this year and the cycle all we want. The ultimate evaluation and the ultimate feedback that we're going to want to see is what happens when they can get in front of kids, when they can host kids, when they can get in living rooms. As Brian Kelly, the one thing he said in his intro today, we just signed an entire recruiting class of kids who did not take a single official visit here. They're not unique in that regard this year. I think everyone's like that, but it's just different. It's weird. So we'll see. You never know which one of these recruits are pulling a Rob Gronkowski. I don't know if you saw what he said this week when they're sending in their workout videos. He said for his off-season conditioning drills, he did everything in one day and just kept switching the shirt out, and then would send in a different video each day of the week to make it look like he was working out every single day to impress these coaches. But when you come out of retirement and Tom Brady's your boy and you're big and you're bulky and you're lovable, hey, you can get away with that. Michael Mayer, do not do that.
Adult Mayer. He's adult Mayer. Yeah, it's, you know, and then certainly this is a point that Elston made today about, you know, Notre Dame being a developmental program, which I think in some ways, I wonder if there was like some recoil to that about like, all right, hold up. But it is true. And they've done a good job with that. You know, because I think he was talking about Ade Ogundeje and Julian Okwara and Khalid Kareem and Dalen Hayes. And they do develop really well. I mean, it's why their 2017 class authored 43 wins, right? I mean, that's part of it. And so, but I say that in the sense of, I'm curious how this class is viewed 4 years from, less about the development part of it and more about identification part of it, because there are kids who didn't have senior seasons. They didn't have official visits. They really did not get the depth of fit on this class as previous classes, based because of the pandemic. Those were hard things to replace. I remember when I talked to Brian Pulling about this, just about, you know, the inability to use your players to gauge this guy fits in our locker room or he doesn't, because the players were those prospects right. were never here. That's tricky, because I think we would both agree Notre Dame's pretty unique spot, right? Like, it takes a unique personality to really thrive at this place as a player. And you're removing a pretty important evaluation layer from that process. So I think that's probably where I'm, other than just sort of Tyler Buchner, how good is he and what can he do? The thing I'm most interested in is like, do you get sort of the three-star hits that you did 4 years ago, like Owusu-Koramoah or Kurt Heinisch, at a time when you really weren't able to drill down nearly as much on these guys as some previous classes.
What's crazy and fascinating to me, and I get why there may be some pushback to those comments from Elston, even though me and you understand what he was trying to say when he said that, because I mean, they do a good job of developing these three stars into yeah. guys who go on to be pros, even if that's not how you want to advertise yourself when you're going head to head with an Ohio State. But Max Olson, our colleague, new father, as of yesterday, has his always excellent recruiting revisited rankings, looking back at the previous 4 years, the class from 4 years earlier. And he runs it every year during the February signing day. And, you know, he had, you know, asked me for a little bit of insight on Notre Dame's. I said, look, you know, this is, you know, if there's one big takeaway, it's a group of guys who committed to a 4-8 program with a coaching staff that was, you know, largely unproven because they were all new and no one knew if it was going to work. They were probably on the hot seat, and they ended up having, I think, the winningest 4-year stretch in Notre Dame history. The first time they ever won 10 games 4 years in a row at a school that's done literally everything there is to do in college football history. I preface all that to say, they were 10th in the initial 2017 rankings in 24/7. And in Max's re-rankings, they actually came in 15th.
Yeah, I talked to Max about that as well. I was surprised because I thought they would naturally go up. And you look at the win totals, right? Like, there isn't anybody around them that's that close, like in the 40s.
You know, Louisiana's right behind him.
Yeah, I don't know. That may take some re-engineering of Max's formula, but due to the impending birth of his child, maybe we can let that go until next year. yeah, because I did sort of a review of that class this week as sort of like a companion piece, and I was shocked how many multi-year starters. Like, usually it's a 21-player class. Usually you do sort of a rule of three. A third of the class is like multi-year starters. A third of the class, like, spot starters, 1 year starters, but helps you. And then the third of the class you never hear from again. And depending on how you want to mark down multi-year starter, you could argue that half the class turned into multi-year starters. I think maybe 11 out of 21, depending on how you wanted to view it. I mean, it's phenomenal. So, you know, all that is good. And, you know, you got to have the developmental. I think that was one of Brian Kelly's opening press conference quotes from December of 2009 was, I guarantee my player development. Well, like, that's happened over the last 4 years with the Matt Bayless strength and conditioning staff and some of the changes that they've made. It's the recruiting aspect, which is just sort of like, feels like they're reaching for something and not quite grasping it yet. But I mean, that's why it's fascinating. Like, you got to go for it. And I'll be curious this next cycle, whether they can get out on the road or not. I don't know, but like, do they get a little bit closer? Because, you know, I was sort of going through the top five classes over the last 5 years, because that was sort of the time frame that Pauline was talking about today. And let's see, that means there's 25 top five classes, and 19 of them were had either by Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, Georgia, or Clemson. So it really sort of mirrors the college football playoff at large. The teams that have won game in there have all signed top five classes. And aside from USC having a couple top five classes 2 years ago, and Texas having a couple of them, that's sort of it. Like, nobody else is really breaking in the top five. Notre Dame, I believe, has had one top five class under Brian Kelly and two top five classes under Charlie Weiss, or maybe one was sixth. But it's just really, really difficult for Notre Dame to break through.
Looking at Max's formula, that Notre Dame class seemed very boom or bust. Higher on booms, obviously, than bust, but you get 5 points if you're an All-American or a top 50 draft pick, four if you're a multi-year starter. And, you know, the numbers go down and on. Two for career backup, zero for minor or no contribution, left the program. And, like, there were – I mean, you look at the twos and lowers there. I get it when looking at, you know the formula behind it. Jafar Armstrong, Jordan Denmark Heath, Michael Young, Cam Smith, Freddie Canting was a zero. I mean, so there were, I think that is what brought down the collective number that allowed Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think like some of the transfers in some ways
from right.
the class, which is not, like, personally, that's not how I view it. But I get it in terms of the way that Max does the formula.
Right. But I mean, who saw Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah being the player
Nobody.
He is? Cole Komet. I mean, Cole Komet was good, but
yeah, everybody on Cole Komet. The opposite of Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah.
I'm just looking at it. It's just yeah, it's
like
just
Banks. I felt like it was a boomer bust prospect when they signed him. Like, huge guy. Is, you know, can you continue to move at that size? Yes. You know, Hainsey, I thought, was a pretty high floor guy. You know, It's also interesting, like Darnell Yule, their top-rated defensive prospect, was one of the washouts, you know, walked away from football. And if you had said, like, Notre Dame's going to play great defense and their top-rated defensive signee is not ever going to play for them, I'd be like, you are insane. Like, it makes no sense whatsoever. But lo and behold, they did a nice job developing around them, and that didn't hurt. I mean, Drew White was ranked – almost outside of the top 1,000. I think he was ranked immediately behind someone who signed with Eastern Michigan. He's going to be a captain. Led the team and tied for the team lead in tackles 2 years ago. SWAT team leader. Like, they've got, and it's worth keeping in mind, he was a guy that committed to Brian Van Gorder. He was so early in his process. Like, that wasn't even somebody that I'm necessarily Mike Elko would have targeted or Clark Lee would have targeted. Coming out of high school. So they even got a lot out of the players that committed way, way early in the cycle.
Right. Myron Tagovailoa-Mosa, 4, Jonathan Dorer, 3, Brock Wright, 3, out of 5. Just a fascinating window into Notre Dame recruiting, I think, when you look at that class and when you look at the roster then, the roster now, the state of the program then, the state of the program now. It does prove their point of what an inexact science this is. But I just think they can be doing better.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I'll be curious to see where that goes. Cause I think that Brian Kelly probably wishes he had not said the top five comment.
I was just going to say, how much you think he regrets saying that right now?
And I think he just could have phrased it differently, like consistently top 10 or knocking on the door of top five. Cause to move into the top five, mathematically, you have to move somebody out. Right. And those teams that are sort of camped up in that area, they aren't moving out. Alabama's not moving out. I think they signed 7 5-star prospects today or this cycle. So it's tough. And I think that's sort of where evaluating Notre Dame's classes should be done through the lens of, is there a Hamilton? Is there a Mayer? Is there a Tyree? Is there a Jordan Johnson? I know he didn't play last year and we all asked about him, but like getting multiple versions of those guys, that's, to me, that is more important than hitting for volume, because Notre Dame, while they have not come out and said it, they have no delusions that they're ever going to match current state of affairs talent levels with Alabama or Georgia or Clemson. That doesn't mean they can't win those games, but they're not going to have the same raw material as those schools. And I think they're living with that. And that's why they focus on development. But can you get just a couple extra guys, a top 50 player here, or, Will Shipley, the 5-star running back who signed with Clemson this cycle. You got to figure out a way to get a couple Will Shipleys. Because certainly when you line up against Alabama and the 5-star count is, what was it, like 18-2 in the game? That's just you're asking too much from your game plan, from your X's and O's, because there's no getting away from the fact that Alabama has great coaches too. They do a great job of developing. Clemson has great coaches. They do a great job of developing. Like Notre Dame is just sort of developing like less high-end material. So how do you get a few more of those guys?
Well, they're getting on the field quicker at those places too, yeah, despite more roadblocks in front of them from a player standpoint. I mean, this Alabama team will go down as an all-time team. I mean, to go undefeated in the SEC and to do what they did to Notre Dame and Ohio State back-to-back. But, I mean, how often do you get a senior Heisman Trophy winner, who exhausts his eligibility? Mm-hmm. Jalen Waddle, same thing. Najee Harris.
How often do you get that? They signed two
first-round
picks at quarterback in the same recruiting class.
But, I mean, Mac Jones, in some ways, to me, like, that resembles more of like a thing that would happen in Notre Dame, right? Where you get like a guy who pays his dues and knows the offense and takes advantage of the system and the talent at his disposal come senior year. The other guy, I mean, Devontae Smith started his career with a walk-off championship winning touchdown, and he finished his career with an offensive MVP award, winning the national championship and the Heisman Trophy. So I think if you're Notre Dame, I agree. I mean, I don't want to say never, but you're not going to wake up tomorrow and start out recruiting Nick Saban and getting every 5-star out there. But to give yourself a chance, you need those fourth and fifth year guys who have developed and matured in your program and played a lot of football, and use that collective experience and schematic factor against an Alabama or a Clemson or whomever, when they're relying on freshmen or grad transfers or guys who are a little greener than usual. But, that's the discouraging part, I think, if you're a Notre Dame fan, is, you saw the first Clemson game and Notre Dame won it, but guess what? Their quarterback set an opponent record against Notre Dame, and he's still around for at least two more years. So, like, Clemson's not going anywhere just because they lost a generational quarterback. Same way they weren't going anywhere when they lost a generational quarterback before that. And all these guys are playing early and are coming out of high school better than ever. And look, we can dissect this a million different ways, whether it's the academic workload, not enough hours a day to get everything done, the cultural or weather climate adjustments. I don't know what the case with Jordan Johnson was. I don't want to say this was the case with him, but we've seen so many cases, whether it was a Jordan Johnson, a Greg Bryant, you name it, where you get this can't miss prospect and you never hear from him pretty much his whole first year there. And the message boards, the tweeters, us, everyone's wondering, like, what's it going to take for these guys to play and play a lot from day one. Now, look, I say all that, and Chris Tyree and Kyren Williams were freshmen and redshirt freshmen, respectively.
Michael Mayer was fine this year.
Kyle Hamilton
the year before that, right?
It can be done. But that's where, when I take a step back and I look at this versus that, that's where I think Notre Dame is lagging. I don't know why that is, or how you go about fixing that or strengthening that.
Yeah, I mean, that's why recruiting is fascinating, right? It's like, it's a question without like a clear answer. That's why the industry exists, like Rivals 24/7 exists, right? Like, because it's just such a subjective industry. And yet, as our friend Ari Wasserman would tell you, stars seem to matter all the time. So
does Ari feel that way?
It feels objective at times.
I hope Ari reads my story tomorrow on two-star Tom Brady favorite, Scotty Miller from Barrington, Illinois.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic. I'll be curious to see where Notre Dame can push it, if they can push it moving forward. There is certainly enough people, I think, in that office, and I think you would agree with me, to sort of take a self-critical look and be like, all right, where can we go here? That doesn't mean they're going to get where they want to go, but I would like to see Notre Dame take some swings. And ultimately, I think that, you know, I wrote this story a year ago on sort of Brian Kelly's post-Camping World or pre-Camping World comments about becoming a top-5 recruiting outfit. There's a lot of skepticism whether Notre Dame can actually do that. But I think it sort of gets more into the take bigger swings more often. Get Will Shipley, be tenacious. I don't think they could have recruited Will Shipley any harder than they did. They need to find 5 or 6 or 7 recruitments exactly like Will Shipley and just be tenacious with them in the 2022 cycle. And then I think you'll sort of see, you know, a Michael Mayer at multiple positions, a Kyle Hamilton at multiple positions. Not everyone's going to hit. Like, maybe Jordan Johnson won't hit. I have no idea. But the more 5 stars you get, the more likely one is going to pan out for you. And that's where Notre Dame has to go.
Yeah, I don't think I could say that any better myself. That's the state of the game right now. That is, you're throwing your hands up, I think. I don't know if that means bedtime or if we're wrapping up here since it's a little late. But I think, you know, that's signing day. That's 2021 for Notre Dame, which will eventually officially hire a safeties coach, which will probably be Chris O'Leary. And hey, we've seen Marcus Freeman's name thrown around for UCF. That would be they need to hire an athletic director first. Yeah. And frankly, I don't think he would go there. I think, it's a great job, but I think you set yourself up for a better job the same way his predecessor did here at Notre Dame, with a couple good years here, which I think, are pointing in that direction, based on early returns.
Yeah. All right. On that note, it is 10:18 PM Eastern time on National Signing Day. So we're going to wrap up this edition of the Shamrock. I'm not sure when we will return. I would like to maybe
get every 2 days we're doing
happening. I'd love to get Dane Brugler on to talk a little NFL draft. Maybe coming out of the Senior Bowl and even the Hula Bowl if you want. As Notre Dame, I think will be sort of an active team there. But spring practice is still might be 2 months away if it starts in first week of April now. So we're sort of back into off season mode a little bit. So maybe this is the time where you reach out to Vince Vaughn's agent again to see if we can get our A-list guest.
I'm on it. I'm on the case, okay. Coach Sampson.
Perfect. I love it. Thank you, Coach Fortuna. On that note, we'll wrap
Coach
up
this T, edition. All right.
Yeah. We'll wrap up this edition of the Shamrock. He's Matt Fortuna, not a coach. I'm Pete Sampson, not a coach either. Thanks for being with us.